It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered. I'm home.
You're like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my God. We're only an hour in.
Eric Bischoff is an idiot.
We have 2 more hours of this.
Maybe the single stupidest idiot that ever got into wrestling.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and threaten me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Welcome to episode 771 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, August 28th, 2022. I am the Solo Monster. It is House of Glory Sunday. Get ready for the big show tonight. So I got a lot of things going on here. We got a full podcast to do, and then I am going to be en route to Terminal 5 in New York City, a building I have not been to in well over a decade. We are having the biggest House of Glory show in the history of the promotion tonight, live on Fight. The House of Black invades House of Glory. We're going to have Malachi Black, Brody King, Buddy Matthews. They're going to be in the house, but they're not the only ones. Because what I'm really looking forward to is this main event tonight. We're going to have Eddie Kingston, who has made some headlines this week that I'm going to be talking about later. He and the Japanese legend Naomichi Marufuji are going to meet one-on-one for the first time ever. I have seen Marufuji in action live before, and I'm going to be able to call my very first match of his tonight, which I'm very excited about. Malachi Black and the Amazing Red, they were supposed to have a match 8 months ago. Red got hurt. Now we're running it back, and it's finally going to happen tonight. Red versus Black. That's going to be a great one. Also, Brody King challenges Jacob Fatu to crown a new House of Glory World Heavyweight Champion. Joey Janela against Charles Mason for the House of Glory Crown Jewel Championship. The Briscoes defend their House of Glory tag team titles in an open challenge. Bandido makes his Hog debut against Low Key. And Bandido was great. He was fantastic on Ric Flair's last match pay-per-view. He takes on Low Key. Bandido replaces Killer Cross. You can stream the event live on Fight tonight, 7 Eastern. And I can tell you honestly that out of all the shows that I have ever called, this will by far be the biggest one. I am excited for tonight. I am excited for everybody involved. I know this is a big night for them as well. If you have never checked out a Hog show before, if you've been on the fence about it, this is the one that you need to buy. So go to Fight. .tv. You'll find the ordering page for it, 7 Eastern tonight. If you are going to the show, hopefully I will see you there. Former WWE head writer Brian Gewirtz is out with a new book. It's called There's Just One Problem. True Tales from the former one-time 7th most powerful person in WWE. You can download the audiobook version for free right now when you use our Audible link to sign up for a 30-day trial. Just go to audibletrial.com/solomonster. Gewirtz lasted 15 years in that company, which is a lifetime. He's got a lot of stories to tell from the Attitude Era on through the Ruthless Aggression and the PG eras. You can get it for free. And if you are an Amazon Prime member, you can use our link and get 2 free books. You can grab the Gewirtz book, and you can grab the John Moxley book, if you still have not done so. Doesn't cost you a thing. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. I want to thank our PayPal producers this week. I want to say thank you to the Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, Night Stalker Nayef Alsafar, James Hollywood Herrera, Big B Brian Becerra, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, Killshot Keith Hart, John Raging Mad Riffle, New York Punk Arnold Modesto, Shin Superkick Akuma, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine Harrison Soep, Iowan Corn Farmer Jesse Lampier, and the Dean of Mean, Devlin Husband. I want to read you what he wrote me, with his permission. It says, I have been a channel member for some time now, but not super active in your community as much as I would like to be. I wanted to let you know that you and your podcast have literally been the best thing for me and have helped me build the motivation to seek out help for my mental health. Being in the military takes a toll on your mental health, and it can become hard to seek out the help that you need. Your podcast and your continuous encouragement to seek out mental health has encouraged me to seek out help of my own. I want to thank you for being there for me during this dark time in my life. Love the podcast and look forward to every Sunday. So that's it right there. I mean, that's what it's all about. And I am glad the show can help you, brother, keep grinding. I'm here every Sunday. You can set your watch to it. So thank you very much for the support. And everybody else as well. All the support on YouTube this week. We had a bunch of big streams. A lot going on in the wrestling world. A lot of stuff going on. A lot of drama going on in wrestling. One more programming note. This Wednesday, not only am I going to be live on YouTube after Dynamite, but earlier that day, and I'll let you guys know exactly when on YouTube. It'll probably be sometime around lunchtime. We're doing another watch-along exclusively for our channel members on YouTube. So if you are part of our channel member family, if you are a Sound Off superstar or a Sound Off legend, you will be able to take part live in the watch-along. We're going to be watching the main event of the last big stadium show that WWE did over in the UK 30 years ago to the day. Now, I believe it's to the day that it aired on pay-per-view, not to the day that it was taped, because SummerSlam 92 at Wembley Stadium was actually on a tape delay, I think by about 48 hours when it aired here in the US. But we're going to be watching the main event, Intercontinental Championship match, of course, a classic between Bret the Hitman Hart and the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith. 30 years ago this week was that match at Wembley Stadium. So we're going to be watching that live on the YouTube channel again. That'll be on Wednesday afternoon. Follow me on Twitter at Solomonster. I'll let you guys know. My guess would be probably around either noon or 1 o'clock Eastern. But I will keep you guys posted. So now would be a fine time to consider channel membership if you are not already a channel member. So we're going to start with AEW this week because there is a lot of crazy stuff going on right now in the world of All Elite Wrestling. You had to expect that the audience would be up on Wednesday night for the biggest match in Dynamite history between CM Punk and Jon Moxley to crown an undisputed AEW World Champion. And they were. They were over a million viewers, which they had to be. Anything less would have been a disaster. I'm sure TNT and TBS are going to be happy with the numbers anyway, but I'm sorry. You put that match out there, you do anything under a million, that would be a disaster. My ratings prediction, I said we should have a contest. This is what I said the other night. We should do a little contest on the stream on Wednesday night. My prediction was 1,050,000. I put it right in the middle there between 1 million and 1.1. I said 1,050,000 viewers. Then the rating came in on Thursday, 1,049,000 viewers. If this was The Price is Right, I would be over the actual retail price. But this ain't The Price is Right, bitch. So I'll take it. What do I win? I won my own contest. What do I get? I also said that that's not the number that really matters. And it really isn't. That number, you could throw it away. The number that really matters is going to be the rating this Wednesday. How many of those extra people who tuned in are going to stick around and come back after seeing that match and after seeing that finish? My guess is not nearly as many. And that is the risk that Tony Khan runs by doing what he did on Wednesday night. They delivered a championship match that did not even close the show, mind you, that ran a grand total of 3 minutes, with Moxley more or less squashing CM Punk and pinning him after two Death Riders to unify the titles. The story was that after a flurry of offense from both guys, Punk threw a head kick, and he immediately went down. He was grabbing the opposite foot. And no, he did not grab the wrong foot. I have seen this all week long. I have seen this. There were people who left YouTube comments. There were tweets. Oh, he used the wrong foot. You forgot to mention during the stream, he was selling the wrong foot. He did not sell the wrong foot. The idea is that he planted the other foot. He could have twisted it. Not the foot that he threw, but the foot that he planted. A literal heel turn is what cost him the championship. And he sold it like he had rebroken it. The doctor was checking on him. Ultimately, he staggered back up on one good leg. Moxley beat his ass. It was a shocking finish, very similar to what WWE did with Bill Goldberg and Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series in 2016. Only here, instead of Punk underestimating Moxley, as Brock underestimated Goldberg, the story was the foot injury and that Punk may have come back too soon. Now, they're telling the exact same story right now with Kenny Omega, that maybe he came back too soon from injury. It feels like we've got these two overlapping stories here. But Punk had not had a great history with Cleveland. They were in Cleveland on Wednesday. Cleveland was the place where he walked out of Monday Night Raw in 2014, never to be seen again in WWE. Cleveland is where he got his ass kicked by Mickey Gall at UFC 203. And Cleveland is where he lost his AEW World Championship to Jon Moxley. But the real story was after the match was over, when they got this great shot of Punk. As he was being helped out of the ring, he was looking back at Moxley celebrating in the crowd. And he was looking around at this cheering audience, celebrating, you know, everyone celebrating Moxley's win. This was the look of a man who I believe is absolutely turning heel. And if he isn't, then he should be. Remember what Punk said last year at the Grand Slam show at Arthur Ashe? He hears people saying they want the old CM Punk, who was always mad and always pissed off. He said, trust me, eventually you'll see him. Be careful what you wish for. Doing what they did is part of a larger story that they're telling with Punk. I don't think it has anything to do with him still being hurt and not being ready to do longer matches. I don't think it has to do with him being punished for going into business for himself with what he said about Hangman Page. And by the way, no follow-up to that whatsoever this week. No receipt from Hangman, who wasn't even on the show. I think Tony Khan had to put his foot down on this stuff. But I don't think it's any of that. I don't think it's Tony Khan's way of getting the belt off him in case he decides to leave the company. These are all scenarios that we went over as potential, you know, ideas or potential reasons that these things were happening. And as I kind of went down the list, I was crossing each one of them off. I don't think it's any of that. I don't think CM Punk is going anywhere. I don't think it's a matter of Tony Khan trying to protect himself in case Punk leaves the company. I don't think it's any of that. The only place that CM Punk is going, and Meltzer said as much in The Observer this week, is to Chicago for the rematch with Jon Moxley at All Out. When the show was over, I wasn't sure what their endgame was for the pay-per-view because we're 7 days away from the show. And we have no main event. The only opponent that really makes sense for Jon Moxley, especially in Chicago, is CM Punk. Now, they could have Moxley come out on TV this week because Moxley has been announced for a promo. We're going to get a Jon Moxley promo on Dynamite this Wednesday, which you had to expect. I can envision Moxley coming out to do a promo and saying, I don't give a shit who steps up. I'm going to be in Chicago. I'm defending my title at All Out. I don't care who it's against. And build intrigue around who might accept his challenge. Or maybe have the winner of the casino ladder match challenge him for the championship later on that night. We don't even know who the participants in the ladder match are going to be yet. But it looks like they're going to shoot the angle on Wednesday to set up the rematch with Punk and Moxley. I still don't agree with giving the first match away the way they did on TV. You know, it might make more sense after All Out. And, you know, surely if they were going to do this finish, you can't do this finish in the main event of the pay-per-view. The people in that building would rebel if you did what they did on Wednesday at All Out. Better to do that on TV if that's what they wanted to do. But you only get to do the first match once. And when it was over, it soured a lot of people on the show. I've never seen a lower percentage, a lower score on Dynamite in all the years I've been doing the Twitter polls, really since the beginning, in late 2019 when the show debuted. All the Twitter polls that I've done, I've never seen this low of a score for an AEW show. There were still more thumbs up than thumbs down, but the number was under 50%, and that's never happened before that I can recall. So clearly there were a lot of pissed off people when that show was over, and it wasn't even a bad show. We had an excellent trios match in the main event with Will Ospreay and Aussie Open beating Death Triangle. Dax Harwood and Jay Lethal had a good one. Ricky Stark showed some great fire in his promo to set up his match with Powerhouse Hobbs. It was not a bad show. But when you promote a huge title match like this, especially in AEW, you have to know that the fans are going to have certain expectations. Tony Khan is usually very good when it comes to reading the room with his own audience and giving the fans what they want to see. This was the first time where that did not happen. It was disappointing. And no, it's not going to kill the company. It's not their finger poke of doom. Some of the things I read this week were just beyond absurd. Will there be viewers who tuned in to see a big title match who aren't going to tune in again this week? Of course, yes, there will be some. They're not going to get a million again this week. But it's not the beginning of the end for AEW. What it is going to do is play into the story that they are trying to tell. Someone the other day said that I was playing mental gymnastics with that and trying to explain the finish away, and that, oh, if WWE had done the same thing, I'd be singing a very different tune. I made it very clear in my review that I thought it was a disappointment. English is my primary language here. You want me to learn? I'll learn to say it in five other fucking languages if you want me to. I thought I was pretty clear in what I said in the review. But it is playing into a larger story. That is a statement of fact. You don't have to like the story they're telling. I'm just stating facts, and sometimes that scares people. In case you forgot, or maybe you're new here, I also raved about the SummerSlam match where Brock Lesnar destroyed John Cena. And that was a pay-per-view main event. Suplex after suplex after suplex, F5, and he pinned him, 1, 2, 3. And I loved every second of it. I said that's exactly what their Extreme Rules match should have been when Lesnar came back to the company. People thought the match was boring. I said these people didn't understand what the point of it was. Brock wasn't there to entertain you. He was there to make you feel uncomfortable. They were telling a story. It was Doomsday killing Superman. This, I wasn't a fan of. But now, if they go to All Out and they do the rematch, maybe with a stipulation, Punk is going to win back the title, because for the larger story to work best, CM Punk should go heel and win back the championship so that when MJF comes back, he could be the one to take the title from CM Punk. I still think that is the end goal of all of this. You know, hey, maybe I'm way off and Tony Khan doesn't want to turn CM Punk heel. And the injury angle is to make his win it all out that much more heroic in front of his hometown fans, because they are in Chicago. And whatever boos CM Punk got in Cleveland on Wednesday are going to be drowned out, if there are any, by an adoring crowd in Chicago. We know he's going to come out and get a hero's welcome. And then maybe the dastardly MJF returns as the heel to rain on his parade. It's very possible. But I think when MJF returns, a lot of people are going to want to cheer for him. The idea of MJF as a babyface, it still feels wrong to me when I say it out loud. But I don't see him being the traditional wrestling babyface. I think it could work. And I think he could be a massive star in that role for them. And you know, I have to say this too. Because the guy gets shit on by so many people. I'm seeing so much hate for this guy. That it makes me want to stick up for him. Jon Moxley does not get enough credit for what he has done for AEW. He gets shit on by a lot of people who make fun of what he looks like, or, oh, he dresses like a bum, he doesn't know how to wrestle, all he knows how to do is bleed, and he does the garbage wrestling stuff, which he does. Ever since the guy came back, he's been wrestling everywhere, he's working with people from all different promotions, but he has been someone that Tony Khan, despite all of these different promotions that he is working for, he has been someone that Tony Khan has been able to lean on and rely on. When Punk went down with the broken foot, he called on Jon Moxley to wrestle Tanahashi because he needed a main event for Forbidden Door. He stepped up, and he has defended that interim championship on TV multiple times. He has been one of the MVPs of this company. And I understand if people don't like his style or they just happen to not be a Jon Moxley fan, but my God, the hate. You don't have to be a Jon Moxley fan, but I think the hate is very much over the top, and if you're not willing to admit the fact that Tony Khan has leaned on the guy and has been very fortunate to have him around to rely on him because he is still one of the biggest names in the entire company, then you're a fool. Facts are facts. People don't like facts, but the facts, they are what they are. You don't have to like them, but it's the truth. Now, Tony Khan held a backstage talent meeting before Dynamite to address the troops, which he had to do, given all of the reports of talent unrest behind the scenes, enough so that they recently promoted people like Tony Schiavone and Pat Buck and QT Marshall to new talent relations positions, and they hired Madison Rayne as a coach. Per PW Insider, he opened the meeting discussing the new vice presidents and talent relations positions and how everything is going to work going forward under that new system. He was very much animated in talking about how the wrestling business has always been dominated by WWE and how AEW has, you know, it was founded to give fans an alternative. And he addressed the reports of WWE reaching out to contracted AEW wrestlers. He said that before the meeting began, he had his chief legal officer send an email to Nick Khan and Stephanie McMahon, warning them not to tamper with their talents. There was that report last week about one talent who alerted AEW management after WWE reached out to them. Meltzer says that there's been more than one person. It isn't just that one person. Multiple people have either been contacted or have they've attempted to contact different people. But there's definitely more than one. This is not just an isolated incident, and it really upset Tony Khan. Pat Buck spoke about how talents would need to respect the coaches and the way things are structured now instead of just going to Tony Khan for everything. He talked about how talents can properly pitch ideas going forward. Tony Schiavone went into his past experience with WCW to give a better idea of why he is now in the position that he is in to be able to help everybody. And Mike Johnson was told that Schiavone came off very well, like an uncle who wanted all of the kids in his family to succeed. Chris Jericho gave what they were told amounted to a speech to rally the troops and to give his own personal thoughts on getting AEW up to this point. The Young Bucks talked, specifically Matt Jackson, about how they are all available to help anybody who wanted the help, and they were very easy to find. Come find us if you need anything. He came off well, but at that point they said Kenny Omega spoke, and Kenny Omega came off as the harshest towards the locker room in what Johnson was told came off as tough love, and by others as really heavy-handed. And some people saw this as Omega trying to light a fire under the roster. Others didn't exactly see it that way, so it sounds like there was very much a differing opinion on what Kenny Omega had to say when this meeting was over. The issues with CM Punk and Hangman were never addressed. The subject of Colt Cabana never came up. Again, there's been a lot of discontent about that and what happened to him and how he was sort of pushed off onto the Ring of Honor brand. None of that was addressed. There has been a lot of fake news being circulated on social media about the relationship between AEW and Warner Brothers Discovery. Fightful Select shot down a lot of it this week. They spoke with a source at Warner Discovery who said that AEW makes no negative waves, holds up their end of the deal well as far as television ratings are concerned. Both sides were said to be pleased with how their House of the Dragon and Shark Week promotions turned out. The reports about the two sides having an adversarial relationship are said to be false, and the two sides meet frequently to discuss the shows. You know, there was some other bullshit, and again, this just goes to the nonsense that pops up on social media. It was one of these dumbass dipshit accounts that started a rumor that Dynamite is going to be reduced to an hour, they're not happy with it in some way, and so instead of 2 hours, the show is going to be 1 hour. If you hear something that just sounds so unbelievable and so sketchy, if you even have to think, is this real? Like, this doesn't sound right. Chances are it's not. And my word to you is to make sure that you check the nature of the source where the information is originating from, because there's a lot of this kind of fake garbage going, especially about AEW, going around on social media that has no basis in fact. That is a false story. I got a couple of questions about that. It is false. There is no truth to it whatsoever. Meltzer had a note in the Observer this week about word coming from Warner Discovery about wanting AEW to tone down the language on the shows. Yeah, because every 5 seconds someone says the word shit, like they have some kind of quota that they're trying to fill. You had MJF calling Tony Khan a fucking mark a few months ago. Jungle Boy called Christian Cage a pussy. It wouldn't be hard to believe that they would want them to tone it down a little bit, but an AEW source told Fightful that they believe that was a quote that was taken out of context from the talent meeting on Wednesday regarding promos and people going into business for themselves. So the point was to stress that they could get heat from the network if they fly a little too close to the sun, but they were told that there was no actual edict from Warner Discovery about the language being used on the shows. I think they should tone it down anyway. I think it'll mean more if we don't hear it every 5 seconds. We got an answer this week as to why Eddie Kingston has been missing from television the past few weeks, and there has been no mention of his match with Sammy Guevara at All Out, which now appears to be off. That is because he was quietly serving out a suspension for pie-facing, or nearly pie-facing, Sammy Guevara backstage after a promo that Sammy cut a couple of weeks ago that they ended up not airing. From Fightful Select, the issue began after Eddie got mad at Sammy not clearing the content of a promo with him first before going out to the ring. And they're told that Eddie and Sammy had not spoken to one another since the Blood and Guts show where he threw Guevara off the top of the cage and he took that big bump through the gimmick table, you know, down below. It was Kingston who actually requested to work with Sammy since Sammy did not exactly have people lining up to work with him after his feud with Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page. Now, I saw fan cam video of the promo, since again, it never aired on TV. I saw fan cam video of it. It happened at the Quake by the Lake show during the Rampage taping. Sammy was in the ring, and he referred to Kingston as a fat piece of shit. Because Kingston was set to beat Sammy in their match at All Out, Kingston took exception to that because he felt that it would bury the match if Sammy got beat by a fat piece of shit. Kingston tweeted on Friday, "Never totally bury your opponent. This is one of the first lessons about promos that Chris Jericho learned, according to his first book, A Lion's Tale." Evidently, Britt Baker never read that book. But the report further states that the crux of the frustration was how Sammy followed up with this after already being perceived as difficult to work with in working with Scorpio Sky, Ethan Page, and Sanjay Dutt in the months prior to this. In the back, Eddie yelled at Sammy, who smiled back at him. So imagine, I've said before, Sammy Guevara, man, he's a great heel because he's got such a punchable face. Now imagine if you've got Eddie Kingston, right? Here comes this kid, and you're already pissed off about something, and you're yelling at him or whatever. You can't say that. You can't call me a fat piece of shit because, you know, this, that, or the other. And this guy just smiles at you. I could picture the steam coming out of Eddie Kingston's ears. I could just picture it. So Kingston responded by pie-facing Guevara, or he went to. There's different reports about what, you know, whether contact was made and how much contact. It's not like he decked him or anything. But Sammy was very unhappy about this. And it's understandable. Look, I'm not condoning going up to your coworker and punching them in the face or smacking them or whatever, unless there's good reason to do it. And Sammy was very unhappy about this. Tony Khan then suspended Kingston for 2 weeks. No word on whether Sammy was suspended, but I don't see why he would be. Kingston responded to PW Insider when he was reached for comment, and he confirmed the suspension. He said, "You know the truth. I wouldn't lie. I was wrong for being unprofessional. That is a blind fact. He did what he did, and the public can judge that, but I know it for a fact that I was wrong." Guevara issued an apology of his own to Fightful, if you could call it that, and he blamed the altercation on a miscommunication between the two of them. This is the full, I want to read the full statement of what Sammy Guevara sent to Fightful. "As a professional, you can communicate things that you don't want to be said, like other people I've been in programs with and have worked with, like Matt Hardy, Chris Jericho, and others have done. And I did communicate what I didn't want to be said in this angle, but Eddie did not do the same. And Eddie did not mention to me, or the coaches, or Tony Khan, or anybody in AEW, what he did not want to be said. So after Ty and Mai's match with Sky Blue and Dante, I cut a promo on Eddie insulting Eddie and the fans as a heel, which I know the thing everyone loves to do is hate me and Ty, so I'm the perfect person to play this asshole character for Eddie to ultimately beat at All Out. I see what people say online about Eddie and his appearance, which anybody who legitimately shames Eddie for how he looks can go to hell. It's the same people who shame me for being too small. But Eddie did not do the professional thing and communicate to me, which if he did, I never would have said it because the last thing I want to do is hurt somebody for real. So after the promo, I get to the back and Eddie is flipping out yelling, 'You can't call me fat,' over and over as I'm trying to walk down the stairs in Gorilla, making a big scene. People get in between us, Eddie tries to pie-face me, and he more like touches my face. It was weird. And everybody backs everybody up. It was unfortunate because this promo was on a taped show and easily could have been edited, which they ended up doing anyway. I know this isn't Eddie's first time being aggressive and getting out of control backstage. I know this isn't Eddie's, I know that he had to do some kind of anger management after this whole thing. This whole thing was very unnecessary, but it is what it is. Live and learn, I guess. On to the next Wico. This whole thing is just completely silly to me. Giving the play-by-play, by the way, for the whole thing the way that he did, he would have been better off just keeping it short and sweet. I don't think he did himself any favors with the way that he worded that. But it looks like the match was scrapped. I don't even think the match is happening now. There was no mention of it at all this week. Even on Rampage, Sammy and Ty had a match. There was no mention about, from what I heard, there was no mention about the Kingston match. But if they do it, they're going to have to change it up now that Sammy gave the fucking finish away, which is just ridiculous. Now, I saw Disco Inferno was trending. I don't even want to mention this clown, but I saw Disco Inferno was trending on Twitter for saying something stupid. What else is new? This time, he was going off on wrestlers who complain about being fat-shamed, even though Kingston claims that's not what the heart of the issue that he had with Sammy was. Disco said that those people need to hit the gym and they need to stop being an embarrassment to the wrestling industry. The only embarrassment to the wrestling industry is Disco Inferno and his awful takes that I see floating around my timeline periodically. I know Kingston hit back at him and he said, "The boys only kept you around to laugh at you. I remember hearing the story where Big Show farted in your face. You ain't a man." I never heard that story and I frankly have no interest in hearing that story. You know, Wikipedia tells me, when I looked it up, that the day that Disco died was July 12, 1979 at Comiskey Park in Chicago. That's wrong. That is incorrect. Somebody is going to have to edit the Wikipedia entry. The day that Disco died is when Cody Rhodes murdered him in a tweet and told him that no fan has ever left a show thinking about Disco Inferno. He gets more attention now for the dumb shit that he says than he ever did as a wrestler. And then he trends. So whenever I see his name trending, I don't even need to look at what he said because I know that I'll be dumber for having listened to it. Thunder Rosa is off the All Out pay-per-view with an injury, confirmed to be an issue with a disc in her back. She has been trying to work through the injury. It's bad enough that she needs time off. And on Dynamite, she announced that she would be stepping down as the AEW Women's Champion. Even though she's stepping down, they're crowning another interim champion. We just had an interim world champion. Now we're going to have another one. Why we need an interim champion if the actual champion is stepping down was never explained. Unless she misspoke. And I don't believe that she did. I think she said it exactly the way that they wanted her to say it. An interim champion will now be decided at All Out. In a fatal four-way match, Toni Storm, Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter, and Hikaru Shida. The plan was for Toni Storm to beat Rosa for the championship, which is what I pitched weeks ago. I thought it was the right time for a title change. Storm posted a photo on Instagram of her jaw all bandaged up after dental surgery of some kind. She said she will be on Dynamite this week, though. Just what that division needs, another injury. Rosa said that Dr. Samson would not clear her to work, so this is what Tony Khan came up with. He loves his interim titles. As much as he loves those White Claws, he loves those interim titles. By the way, I had a White Claw for the first time last weekend. I don't usually drink seltzers or anything like that, but I was at a barbecue and they had them. So I figured I would try one. I thought it tasted like shit. I just felt like mentioning that because every time there was an AEW party or something, you saw people hanging out backstage at an AEW show, especially during the Daily's Place pandemic shows. It was always White Claws. White Claw this, White Claw that. I'm like, I had never tried it before. I'm like, let me try this thing and see how good this is. Tasted like fucking shit. But I still think Toni Storm should get the title. Now it's a four-way, but I don't think the outcome should be any different. I would not be opposed to Jamie Hayter getting a run as the interim champion if that's the direction they wanted to go in. They could use it as a way to get her the fuck away from Britt Baker. You know, it's been a year. It was a year ago this month that she returned to the company and she joined up with Britt, which seemed like a smart idea at the time. Britt gets a bodyguard, but she gets, you know, someone who can watch her back. And she was the most pushed star in the division. So having Jamie Hayter hang around her didn't sound like a bad idea for Jamie. Now, though, here we are a year later. I just think she's floundering in Brit shadow. I think it's a waste of Jamie Hayter. She told What Culture in June that if she wasn't with Britt Baker, she would want to join the Blackpool Combat Club. Hey, sounds good to me. That'd be a great idea. So Britt Baker ends up on the pay-per-view after all. After that segment last week where she talked about being left off the show, she ends up on the pay-per-view after all. She should be sending Thunder Rosa a gift basket. But there will be no exchange of gifts between the two women. Britt Baker does not like Thunder Rosa. Thunder Rosa does not like Britt Baker. And that's not just for show. These two women do not like each other. They do not get along. They do not socialize together backstage. They do not hang out in the same circles. They don't want to have anything to do with each other. Fightful says that there is also some heat between Rosa and Jamie Hayter, which I have to assume stems from, well, I mean, it probably stems from a couple of things. Number one, if she's hanging around Britt Baker all the time and Britt's in her ear, then it's not surprising that Jamie Hayter would not like Thunder Rosa. But I'm guessing the main issue stems from Rosa accidentally breaking Hayter's nose in their Battle of the Belts match. I remember the spot where it happened. It was on a brainbuster. Hayter was actually executing the brainbuster. She had Rosa up in the air and dropped her down, and I guess Rosa, when she came straight down, her shoulder, I assume, came straight down on Hayter's face, and then she immediately grabbed her nose. Rosa has had issues in the past with other people as well. She's had issues with Ivelisse. There was the whole sandbagging controversy with Marina Shafir. Rosa even had a t-shirt made up that said sandbagger, I think is what it said. She wore it on TV. You know, she said because she was tired of people spreading lies about her, so this was her way of kind of mocking it and throwing it back in those people's faces. But it was telling that when Britt Baker cut that promo on Wednesday after her match with Kylan King, the first words out of her mouth were about how a real champion would work through injury like I did when I had my broken wrist when I was the champion. I'm surprised Rosa didn't pull an Eddie Kingston on her when she got to the back for that line. Rosa announced that she was taking a break from social media on Thursday after all kinds of stories were being circulated online about her injury, people thinking she's faking it to get out of doing a job, like she's Shawn Michaels in 1997, and all, you know, tweeting about all this stuff about her and Britt Baker, and I mean, really a lot of hate directed at Thunder Rosa. Her silence did not last long because she went on Busted Open Radio on Friday morning to address a lot of different things. About her injury, she said, "I am not the best physically right now. I was in a lot of pain yesterday. A lot has been happening in the last couple of weeks. Unfortunately, I'm going to be out of commission. I don't know for how long. For a couple of months, probably. I have a problem with my back, and yesterday I was trying to be strong. Back problems are not easy. Some days are good, some days are not. Yesterday was not a good day. I was in a lot of pain. That's one of the reasons why I'm taking time off. I want to clear the air. This is not fake. This is not a work. I am not comparing injuries to injuries. If I could fucking walk, I can fucking work. Dr. Samson did not clear me to wrestle. I am not cleared to wrestle. It is not that I don't want to do a match at All Out. I can't walk. It's a shame that this is being put on social media, not only to discredit me as an athlete, but also to discredit me as a wrestler. I want to walk when I'm 40. I have the right to say no. I can't walk. I can't do it. I don't want to have surgery. If we keep doing this and going through the pain, then I'm going to be out for longer. I don't want to do that." So she's obviously very pissed off about all this stuff. She reads what's being said about her. She knows things are being leaked from certain individuals behind the scenes about her. She's not a dumb person. In reference to other rumors, like one ridiculous one about how she hid in a bathroom after her Battle of the Belts match with Hayter, I guess to hide from Hayter, she was afraid that Jamie was going to be angry and coming after her because she broke her nose, so she hid in the bathroom. That is one of the more ridiculous stories I read this week. She said this: "Not everything that is being said is true. If anybody has a problem with me, anyone, call Busted Open, call my number, tell me to my face. I don't hide from my problems. I don't run from my problems. You can talk to me. My door is open. That goes for anybody. I have taken accountability when things have happened. I'm a straightforward person. Some people don't like that and they are afraid of that. I'm not. I'm a trained fighter. I don't run away from shit. Stop reading stupid shit online." you know, between the CM Punk and Hangman stuff and the Eddie Kingston, Sammy Guevara stuff and now this, I think it may take more than one backstage meeting for Tony Khan to get his house in order. What the fuck is going on in AEW right now? What is going on? It just feels like the shit's hitting the fan all at the same time. It's like they have a substitute teacher because their usual teacher is out with the flu and the kids are climbing the walls. You know, someone asked me a question the other day about the women. If I was a free agent female right now and I had the choice of signing with WWE or with AEW, which company would I choose? If you gave me the choice right now, I'm signing with WWE. And it's honestly not even a difficult decision. Because even though the women's division in WWE still has its flaws, and look, when you sign with WWE, you are exclusive to WWE. So if you are somebody who likes the freedom of being able to book your own independent shots and stuff, you're not going to have that power in WWE. But in terms of how the women are presented and how much television time WWE devotes to them, it's night and day compared with AEW and how they're presented. Night and day. Before all the Vince McMahon drama went down, I said Sasha Banks would be a huge pickup for Tony Khan if it changes the way that he approaches the women's division. Sasha could be a game changer for the company in that way, as far as potentially getting them featured more often, and she would have all of these new opponents to work with. I'm not convinced, though, that Tony Khan would really do anything different. Now, I think WWE is the place for Sasha to be. And Naomi, too. It's one area where they absolutely have a leg up on AEW, is with how many segments on their shows are devoted to the women. It's not even close. And I know they've been hit recently with injuries to Chris Statlander, who they had big plans for, and now Thunder Rosa. But you watch any episode of Dynamite and tell me that this women's division is not treated like an afterthought. You can sign as many women as you want and throw them on Dark or give people a Sky Blue match on Rampage every now and then. It comes down to the stories and the amount of TV time that you devote to these people. This division is a fucking mess right now. And AEW just trademarked the name All Elite Women for a potential show. I don't know if it's a wrestling show or a reality show, but they trademarked All Elite Women. It's coming soon. If it's an all-women show, I expect the entire thing to air in picture-in-picture. Will Ospreay had himself a hell of a week, losing to Okada in a fantastic finale to the G1 Climax, even better than the match that he had with Shingo a few weeks ago. The RevPro match that he had with Speedball Mike Bailey, which I have not seen, but I keep reading, was great. And then coming back to the States to tear down the house with Penta, Rey Fénix, and Pac on Dynamite. Ospreay is the best in the world right now. I will go out and say that right now. Will Ospreay is the best in the world right now. He is incredible. United Empire beat Death Triangle to advance to the semifinal round of the Trios title tournament, where they will now face Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks this Wednesday. We are going to get Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay in the same ring this week. This is where United Empire's run comes to an end, because it is going to be Omega and the Bucks against the Dark Order in the finals. As expected, Dark Order beat the House of Black on Friday when Miro cost them their match to set up what I have to assume is Malakai Brody and Buddy against Miro, Sting, and Darby Allin for All Out. The singles match with Omega and Ospreay is probably happening at Wrestle Kingdom, but I would love to see it maybe at Arthur Ashe Stadium next month, because I'll be there. But it's probably a Tokyo Dome match. It would be a much bigger deal to get Omega back in the Dome for the first time since he left. And we know there are going to be some AEW names at the Dome this year. FTR would make sense unless they drop the IWGP tag belts before then. And we finally got some full-length gameplay. Some fresh gameplay for the AEW Fight Forever game. Evil Uno and Colt Cabana were at Gamescom in Germany this week, live streaming on Twitch with one of the THQ developers walking us through a match between Kenny Omega and Adam Cole. You know, the game isn't even out yet, and it already won an award at Gamescom. It won the 2022 award for Best Sports Game. And if you are a fan of the graphics and the gameplay of the old N64 games, and I did not own an N64 at the time, but I had friends who did, so I have fond memories of playing No Mercy and WCW NWO Revenge. If you enjoyed those games, then you will like this game. Based on the looks of it, you will like this game. In fact, the THQ developer in the video specifically said it plays like the N64 games. There was a clip that I saw of a match between CM Punk and Paul White, so there you go, I guess Big Show's in the game, where Big Show was doing the old chest block that was in a lot of those old games. But anyway, some other notes. They confirmed a deep career mode where players will go on the road and can select a manager as well. They will also have a mode where when you cut a promo on somebody, if you do not like what they say, when they cut to the gorilla position and the person comes walking back through gorilla, you can pie face them. And then Tony Khan will walk over with a white claw in hand and he will suspend you for 2 weeks. The controls were described as easy to learn but hard to master. Kickouts and escaping submissions are done through button mashing, which sounds like this is going to be right up my alley. Anybody who watches me when I play 2K22, I am a button masher. There will be 40 different usable weapons in the game. You can grab them from under the ring just like you can in 2K22. The game will have blood, but, I mean, this is an AEW game, so of course it will. I don't think Jon Moxley would allow his likeness in the game if it didn't have blood. You'll be able to do intergender matches, and you can modify most things like entrances, arenas, and ring attire, but as far as a firm release date, we still do not have one. They use words like in the future sometime and stay tuned, which does not sound very promising to me. Let's talk about WWE. Jeff Jarrett is out. Road Dogg is in. WWE got rid of Double J and they replaced him with the real Double J. Jarrett had only recently started in his new position as the Senior Vice President of Live Events for WWE. And after less than 4 months on the job, he was let go and replaced by Brian James, who only a couple of weeks ago was on Busted Open Radio, literally begging Tony Khan for a job. At a time when live events have actually been up for WWE, they made this change. But this is all part of Triple H wanting his people in positions of power. Road Dogg was a Triple H guy from NXT. Road Dogg was let go in January. Think of the timeline here. He was fired in January. That was at a time when Triple H was still recovering from his heart attack and he no longer had any real power in NXT. And they cleaned out most of his guys. Shawn Michaels is still there. Steve Corino is still there, but not too many others. They got rid of Road Dogg. They got rid of Regal. They got rid of a whole bunch of people. And now he is bringing people in that he likes and that he is familiar with. Jeff Jarrett was not one of those people. Jeff Jarrett was brought in when Bruce Pritchard went to Vince McMahon and suggested hiring him. Conrad's boys sticking up for each other. They're looking out for one another. Which probably doesn't bode well long term for Bruce Pritchard. Because he's a Vince McMahon guy. Although, he'll go whichever way the wind blows, I'm sure. But Jarrett will be fine. He always seems to land on his feet. He's like a fucking cat, this guy. He always lands on his feet. He's got his podcast with Conrad and I don't know what Conrad is cooking up. He's already teasing some kind of project. I don't know if it's an actual promotion or what that Jarrett is probably going to be involved in. And while Triple H is making changes, I want to co-sign something that Mike Johnson said this week. That if Triple H is hiring back people who worked for him in NXT and at the Performance Center, the next person that he should bring back, the next person he should be on the phone to, is Kathy Carino, the former Alice in Danger. She was among the staff cuts at the PC in January. She moved her family cross-country from Las Vegas to Orlando. She was getting rave reviews from her bosses, only to be fired 3 months after she was hired because of what they claimed were budget cuts. Her daughter's very first day at her new school is when she got the call that she was being let go. It was the scummiest of all the releases that they made. It's the one that got the least attention because she's not a visible presence on TV. And she was never a major name in a major promotion. She was never in WWE. She never had a big run. So it sort of fell under the radar. Nobody really was talking about it at the time. She's been going through tough times ever since. She told Renee Young that this has been a rock bottom year for her and her family, financially and otherwise. Her husband had to take a job in South Carolina, so her family is sort of all split up and spread apart right now. I 100% agree that the next person Triple H should have on speed dial is her, with an offer to bring her back ASAP. He needs to right that wrong. If she was doing such a good job as she claims they told her at the time, then there's no reason not to bring her back if they think that she can be of help to them. Per PW Insider, with all the talk of changes and potential changes within WWE, one aspect that has yet to be talked about is the major positive change in the energy and flow within the company as the old feeling of walking on eggshells that was so prevalent in a lot of different departments has quickly faded away. And they say it's been replaced with a renewed hope and pride for those working for the company. One department where that change has been described as massively night and day has been inside the company's production end. The new regime of Nick Khan, Triple H, and Stephanie McMahon have come with a major positive. There isn't anyone yelling at the production truck or the announcers anymore, since Vince McMahon is no longer there. Who knew that by not yelling in someone's ear every fucking week, that they would start to enjoy their job a little bit more? Who knew? For those who work on WWE's TV production side, Mondays and Fridays are no longer seen as the worst days on the job. Instead, over the last several weeks, the department has started to settle into a situation where instead, while the days are extremely long and hard, everybody is not walking in and out expecting some sort of PTSD to follow them home the next day after Raw and SmackDown. In turn, the entire department, including announcers, cameramen, producers, directors, etc., have been extremely happy over the last few weeks, and as one person stated, allowed to feel like it's fun to work there. It's all led to a better flow and engagement across the board, sparking creative ideas and more camaraderie. And PW Insider says they've heard from several people who were looking to leave the company just a few months ago who have reconsidered that decision, and many others who have pointed out how happy they are and how they hope the current honeymoon feeling of the new regime remains because it has already meant a world of difference in their day-to-day professional lives. There is a honeymoon period for this new regime. We don't know how long it will last, but Triple H held that meeting and told the roster a few weeks ago that he wanted to make WWE a place where it was fun to come to work. And that has extended now to the production team, and the easiest way to retain talent is to keep them happy and not give them a reason to want to leave and go somewhere else. So we're going to see that, I think, when contracts come due. Talent that may have made the jump to AEW now are more likely to stay put. And talent from AEW, given all the stuff going on behind the scenes in WWE lately, they may be feeling froggy and they may want to make a jump. So when this year is over, one of the top stories of 2022, I think, is going to be this change in momentum, how quickly everything changed over the course of this summer in the span of only a month or two. The challenge now is to sustain that momentum. Right now, WWE has a chance to build a lot of goodwill, not only with the talent and their employees, but with the fans as well. It's working so far, but it's only been a month, right? It remains to be seen how long this period will last for. Sean Ross Sapp reported on Fightful Select this week that the next WWE draft is likely to take place after WrestleMania next year, which is a change from what we were hearing only a couple of weeks ago, where it was looking like later next month. Or sometime after Clash at the Castle, there would be another draft. The report says, we had reported that many on the WWE roster were expecting the draft to take place after Clash at the Castle. However, that does not seem to be anywhere near a slam dunk anymore. We are told by WWE sources that several Raw talents were unbooked from the SmackDown episode that follows Clash at the Castle. Many stars had been told that the draft was likely taking place that week, but if it is, a significant number of crossover talent were not involved. USA Network sources have told talent that the draft is not happening in the immediate future and have outright stated that after WrestleMania is a likelier landing spot. WWE has not officially announced the draft and has not given us confirmation about any of the dates. We were told that internally USA Network does not have a date listed at all for an upcoming draft. So that's the update on the draft, and look, I said, was it last week or the week before, that of all years, if you were going to do a draft in the fall, before Survivor Series, that I could understand them wanting to do one now, because Triple H has taken over, and he wants to make these rosters his own. Right now, he's working off of a Vince McMahon Raw roster and a Vince McMahon SmackDown roster, and I completely understand if he wants to do a draft now and really shake things up. But in a perfect world, you don't do a draft in the fall. You do not do a draft a month or two before Survivor Series. It is stupid and it does not make any sense. You do the draft in April. You do the draft in the weeks following WrestleMania. And so nothing is set in stone, but the fact that they're considering possibly moving the draft to post-WrestleMania makes me very happy, because that would make a lot more sense. And if you want to continue to do the brand supremacy stuff, Raw versus SmackDown every November at Survivor Series, I just think it'll be a little more meaningful if you have people who have been on Raw and who have been on SmackDown for a period of many, many months who actually have been able to build up brand loyalty instead of just drafting them to a new show and then, a month and a half later, you put a fucking red t-shirt on them. So I am all in favor of moving the draft to after WrestleMania. I hope that plan sticks, but I also understand that if Triple H, he really wants to shake things up, he's going to want to make roster moves before April. Maybe he doesn't need a whole formal draft. He could still call people up. He can still move people. You could do a trade, even though there's no GMs for each show. Adam Pearce is the only authority figure we ever really see anymore, now that Sonya Deville lost all of her power. But I am definitely in favor of moving it to after WrestleMania. Last month, Andrew Zarian of the Mat Men podcast reported that there was a memo that went out internally within USA Network about Monday Night Raw moving from TV PG to TV 14. And even Pat McAfee that week joked about it on SmackDown. That memo was said to have gone out prematurely, and we haven't heard anything about it since. This week came word that while there was smoke to the fire at the time, it was not an illegitimate report. But the latest is that that is no longer the case, and WWE will not be going TV-14. Their shows will be staying TV-PG for the foreseeable future. I said it then, I'll say it now. The rating doesn't matter. Ratings, plural, matter. I'm not talking about the Nielsen ratings. The television rating, the rating of the actual show, in the little box in the corner of the screen, the rating does not matter. Okay? Call me when they make the show TVY7, and then we'll have a conversation about that, okay? Unless they do that, okay, and we're going to start to see fucking unicorns and purple dinosaurs on the show and little Muppets, I wouldn't worry so much about the rating in the corner of the screen. It doesn't matter. It would not make the show any better. If you made the show NC-17, that in and of itself would not make the show any better. It all comes down to creative. It all comes down to the stories that you tell and what you do with your talent. Right? Now look, when I said this, that was before Vince McMahon resigned. Now we've got a new vision under Triple H, and they can keep the shows PG for all I care as long as they keep on the path that they have been on. This is what I said at the time. Vince was still the guy, and I said, look, nothing is ever going to really change unless you have a change at the top. I had no idea that change was going to come in a matter of weeks, but it did. And now we'll get to see that. We're already seeing signs of it. People are already coming around on Raw and saying, wow, okay, I'm noticing how the show has made improvements and it is getting a little bit better each week. And they're doing it while it's PG. The rating has not changed. All it does is prove my point that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. You make the little changes that matter. Focus on the stories, focus on the stars, focus on the creative, and that is how you will improve the shows and win people back. The letters or the number or the corner of the screen, it doesn't matter. Every time somebody talks about, oh my God, TV-14 is going to come back, it's much ado about nothing. It does not matter. Now, I mentioned Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon, who has been laying low ever since he resigned from the company, he celebrated his 77th birthday at dinner in New York City with John Cena and his wife, with The Undertaker, with Brock Lesnar, and Pat McAfee. They were all spotted. Well, I didn't see The Undertaker, but apparently he was there. But I did see Lesnar and McAfee. They were hanging out outside the building. One person who was not there to celebrate his birthday with him was his wife, Linda. Although Vince did show up with a lady friend who was not identified, she was photographed by TMZ with her purse strap in her mouth as they were leaving the restaurant. I guess the meal wasn't filling enough. She decided to have her purse for dessert. But Vince had no interest in talking to anybody. He threw his hand up to try to cover his face as he was leaving. The Netflix and the book projects that were being worked on about the life of Vince McMahon, by the way, they are still happening. Turns out they are still being worked on. I have not heard anything mentioned, though, about the HBO Real Sports episode that was also being worked on. This is before he resigned. I don't know if they gave up on it once he stepped down or if they're still working on it. I have not heard anything new on that front. And Belt Fan Dan on Twitter, and who knows more about wrestling belts than Belt Fan Dan, he says the rumor going around the campfire this week is that Triple H is making numerous belt design changes. Hallelujah! They cannot come soon enough. Get rid of that Intercontinental title first. That's the first order of business. Actually, the first order of business is to burn the 24/7 belt. But after you do that, get rid of the Intercontinental title. There was no need to change away from the last design. I would still be very surprised if we don't end up with some sort of logo belt, because I know how much they love those fucking logo belts and sending them out to all the sports teams. But I know Triple H is an old school guy. He's got a bunch of old belts on display in his office at the tower. I know people want the Winged Eagle. I know people want Big Gold. They want the old belts to make a return. Believe me, nobody would love that more than I would. I'm okay with not just bringing back all the old belts and you know, slapping the new logo on it. It's okay to come up with something new. I'm not against the idea of having a new design. I'm not against the idea of trying something different and having something new. My issue is that more often than not, when they try something new, it doesn't look good. And it's inferior to what came before it. That's usually my issue with it. But it's okay to come up with something new. Maybe something that incorporates elements of the old school with the new school. So maybe take elements of Big Gold or take elements of the Winged Eagle and incorporate that into a new design. All I ask is that we get belts that actually look like something people would want to fight for. That is all I ask. I look at some of these belts, and we're supposed to believe that these people go out there on television and they have these great battles and they're fighting for the championship. And most of the time I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I don't think I would really put up much of a fight for a belt that looks like that. I'd let the other guy have it. We need to get away from that. We need belts that look prestigious, that you would actually want to win. You know what I want to fight for? I want to fight for your mental health. That's what I want to fight for, which is why I am happy to have BetterHelp sponsoring this week's episode. This is a message from our sponsor, BetterHelp. I've read that doing things like learning a new language or taking power naps in the middle of the day can do wonders for your brain. I should definitely try to take naps more often, especially as late as some of these live streams go on YouTube. I always feel like I never have enough time. But here's the thing, if you're like me, you need to make time for these things, because a healthy brain is something that we all need to have. It's one of the reasons why I recommend using BetterHelp online therapy. Everybody is dealing with something. Question is, how is it affecting your life and your everyday experiences? If it's affecting your everyday life, you should consider talking to a therapist. Someone with experience in dealing with whatever you're going through, that's what makes BetterHelp such a valuable resource. BetterHelp is online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat-only sessions with your very own therapist. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. When I tried it, they matched me with somebody in less than 24. Right now, Sound Off listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Solomonster. That's BetterHelp.com/Solomonster. WWE had 14,000 fans in Toronto for Raw on Monday, the biggest Raw crowd all year, in the same week that Survivor Series tickets basically sold out during their presale, and then once the tickets went on sale to the public, whatever was left, poof, gone. That's coming off moving 90,000 tickets in the first 24 hours they went on sale for both nights of next year's WrestleMania. So WWE is the hot ticket right now. Here's hoping that Triple H can reward the fans who bought those Survivor Series tickets and really make it a memorable show. I would love for Survivor Series to feel like a much bigger deal than it has in recent years. Or if you're going to do Raw versus SmackDown, at least have stakes. Raw Monday night saw the return of Johnny Gargano. Johnny Wrestling is back. That Gargano would come back to WWE, that wasn't a surprise to me. But the way they just played his music and they sent him out there, that was a surprise. And that's what they were going for. They wanted to shock people. They even secretly flew him into the show on the corporate jet so nobody would see him. Gargano is a prime example of why sometimes it pays to be patient. 6 months ago, I would have bet money that we would be seeing him in an AEW ring wrestling Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole. Oh, what a difference only a few months can make. He waited things out, spent some quality time at home with the little one, and the entire wrestling world got flipped upside down. The man who built the NXT brand around him is now running Raw and SmackDown. And given how hard it is for, you know, people to get television time these days on Dynamite, him going back to WWE had to be one of the easiest decisions in the world. It was also the right decision. He said in his last NXT appearance that if you bet on yourself, you'll never fail. And that's what he is doing right now. He says he dreamt of being the Intercontinental Champion one day. He dreamt of being the United States Champion. He dreamt of being the WWE Champion. He dreamt of being at WrestleMania. He will have a chance to do all of those things. There was a time where I thought Intercontinental or US was the best he could have hoped for under Vince McMahon. Could I see WWE Champion Johnny Gargano one day? Yes. Yes, I can. He has the ability to draw people into his matches. Two of the very best matches in NXT history, two of my favorite matches, both involved Johnny Gargano wrestling for the World Championship. It was always a matter of whether he would be given the chance to get over in front of a main roster audience. If he really got the chance, could he get over? Could people buy into Johnny Gargano? Yes, he is a smaller guy. Could people buy into Johnny Gargano in that spot? Now he's going to have that chance. And I think the answer is yes, they can. They had Austin Theory come out to interrupt, and we got a reunion between them that ended with Gargano laying him out with a super kick. It was very similar to a segment on Raw many years ago when they announced Shawn Michaels was being inducted into the Hall of Fame. And he came out right after. People didn't even know he was in the building. And he was interrupted before he even said a word. He was interrupted by Alberto Del Dipshit. And he came out and he was, you know, cutting a promo on Shawn and insulting him. And then at the very end of it, he basically fed his face to Shawn. He stuck his face out. You knew exactly what was coming. He fed into it for the super kick. That's kind of the way this ended. That's kind of what this reminded me of. But it looks like Johnny Wrestling has his first main roster program set. The ultimate direction, though, needs to be a reunion of DIY with Tommaso Ciampa. A Gargano and Miz feud could be the pathway to get there. It leads to Ciampa breaking away from Miz and reuniting with Gargano. I want to see them recreate on the main roster what they were able to do in the tag team division in NXT. There'll be plenty of time for Ciampa and Gargano to have singles runs and see how high they can go. But the tag team division in WWE right now could use a team like DIY. That is, of course, if they can find The Miz, who was abducted by Dexter Lumis on Monday. Lumis was not after AJ Styles after all. He was after The Miz for reasons that remain unknown. Very interesting that it was Lumis who kidnapped Miz given his connection to Gargano's group in NXT. Maybe it wasn't a coincidence that Gargano came out in the segment that came right after this. But Lumis kidnapped Miz in Canada, then traveled all the way down to Orlando 24 hours later to reunite with his lady, only to be arrested 60 seconds later as soon as he got to the back. I haven't seen a love story this touching since Kane and Katie Vick. I guess Miz found his way home because he's being advertised for a match tomorrow night against Bobby Lashley. Edge got a win over Damian Priest in his hometown of Toronto, even busted out a Canadian destroyer in the match. And when he was attacked by the Judgment Day after the match, it was Beth Phoenix out of the crowd who came to her husband's aid with a chair, came to his rescue. Rhea Ripley had to be held back. She had to be restrained. She wanted at her in the worst way, but Priest and Balor held her back. Sounds like the plan for Clash at the Castle is to do all three members of Judgment Day against Rey Mysterio, Edge, and Beth Phoenix. Which is cool. I think that's a, you know, we already have another six-person tag on the show with the women, but that's fine. I mean, God knows we have plenty of trios matches in AEW. So having a couple on this one pay-per-view is fine. Dominic is the odd man out, and I think there may be a heel turn on the way. All those beatdowns from Rhea, She's got that boy wrapped around her finger. He'll do anything she wants him to do at this point. I mean, if you have the choice between Rey Mysterio and Rhea Ripley, who are you going to hang around with? One of the things that Triple H has done that I love, in the span of only a few weeks, he has given Kevin Owens a reset back to the NXT version of KO, right down to the t-shirt and the Titantron when he walks out. They had Owens kill off Ezekiel a few weeks ago and largely drop the comedy stuff in favor of the prize fighter gimmick that he originally walked in the door with when he first beat John Cena. So I love that. I love what they are doing with Kevin Owens over the last few weeks. The Women's Tag Team Title Tournament, that continues to be cursed. First, it was Nikita Lyons and Zoe Stark who were taken out of the tournament due to an injury to Zoe. They were replaced by Toxic Attraction. Well, now Gigi Dolin is hurt, set to be a concussion that she suffered in their match on SmackDown last week. And so on Friday, they held a second chance Fatal 4-Way to determine who would wrestle Raquel and Aaliyah later on in the night. A Fatal 4-Way that lasted 3 minutes. They condensed a 10-minute match into three. And it was too short to mean anything. You cannot do a 4-Way match in 3 minutes. You just can't do it. Nikki Cross got superplexed to the floor onto a pile of bodies, took a nasty landing on her leg. She immediately grabbed her ankle, got rolled into the ring and pinned by Sonya Deville as planned. Then later on, when Sonya and Natty were being interviewed in the back, we could see an intense argument taking place in the background with Nikki and Doudrop, which we couldn't hear what was being said, but clearly they were having some kind of a disagreement. I took that as a good sign for Nikki's leg, that she was okay, but we don't know if this segment was shot earlier and then it was inserted. Maybe it was shot out of order. We don't know. Hopefully she's okay, but I'm glad they're finally moving the story along with her and Doudrop that they dropped. They Doudropped it a few months ago where Doudrop was trying to get her to get serious, right? We had a few backstage segments. She was trying to get her to be serious again. So either they're going back to that or they're breaking them up. Maybe we'll get crazy Nikki Cross back instead of the superhero cosplay. Raquel and Aaliyah beat Natty and Sonya later in the night to set up the finals on Raw tomorrow night, with Raquel and Aaliyah taking on Dakota Kai and Io Sky. Aaliyah is the clear weak link. She has been positioned clearly as the weak link of this team heading into tomorrow night. So I am sure that they will take every measure to protect Raquel when they lose. And they will. Dakota and Io will be your new women's tag team champions. They're in Pittsburgh tomorrow night. Kurt Angle, the hometown hero. Kurt Angle is on the show. Maybe he'll do something with the Alpha Academy. Chad Gable did say that they're accepting applications for new students, so maybe Kurt can suggest someone. Now, on SmackDown, we had a face-to-face in the ring with Sheamus and Walter, who are wrestling for the Intercontinental title next weekend, and it will be glorious. They taped two episodes of SmackDown Friday night since they are going to be traveling next Friday. And Butch, on the second show that airs on Friday, Butch wrestled Ludwig Kaiser. Now, I don't have any match spoilers, but I will tell you, someone sent me a photo of Butch in the ring before the match, and he was wearing his old Pete Dunne ring gear. I got my fingers crossed. We are heading in the right direction. That's a good sign. We got another entertaining segment in the back this week with Sami Zayn and the Bloodline. This has become my favorite thing in wrestling. Right now, this is my favorite thing on any wrestling show. It's the best story going. Sami had Jey Uso cracking up in the background at one point, and Jey is supposed to be the straight man in these scenes. He's the one who hates Sami's guts, can't stand the guy, but even he had to put his hand up to cover his mouth to stop from laughing when Sami started doing a dance in his seat. He is still playing the useful idiot for Roman Reigns. He lost to Drew McIntyre in the main event, but the Bloodline put a stiff beatdown on Drew at the end of the show. Drew had just all these bloody welts all over his back from all the chair shots. And even they even held him. The Usos held McIntyre by the barricade outside at one point so that Sami could hit a Huluva kick. And at the end of the show, when they were celebrating in the ring over Drew's dead body, Sami, there he is in the background, in the ring with them, putting up the one. right? Putting up that one, you know, the we the twos, we the ones thing that the bloodline does. Sammy's all in. He's all in on this group. But I love all the stuff involving these guys is great. Now, Sammy and Kevin Owens reuniting to take the tag team titles from the Usos absolutely needs to happen. But I'm less sure about what they're going to be doing in Cardiff with Drew McIntyre. I think he's going to get the old Broken Dreams entrance. And so that'll be cool. I think they've done a very good job with the video packages they aired on Friday also of really building him up as a serious threat to Roman's reign. And I said the other night, it's hard to imagine building him up in the way that they have and going all the way to the UK and not walking out as champion. Imagine them pulling a Luger on this man and having him Claymore kick Roman out of the ring and taking the count out win like an idiot. If this was Vince McMahon, I might worry about that, but it's going to be Triple H's call what he does here, and I think Drew goes over. I still feel like Drew goes over, but I also still feel like the better story, and it absolutely is the better story, is Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania being the one to dethrone Roman Reigns. It's a long time to wait, and they don't have a lot of names left that have not already fallen victim to the, what we have taken to call the Reigns of Terror. So I'm kind of torn on this, you know, I mean, it would be death for Drew to go to the UK and lose, but I like the Mania story with Cody so much more. Over on NXT, they are getting ready for Worlds Collide, and on the show Tuesday night, Bron Breakker against Tyler Bate was made official. It will be a unification match for the NXT and NXT UK championships. The NXT UK title is probably the nicest looking belt in the entire company, so it's a shame that it's going to go away. I assume they'll spawn a new set of belts once NXT Europe launches next year. Maybe the NXT European Championship. Maybe. Gallus had a crack at Briggs and Jensen in their NXT UK tag team belts, but the match was ruined by a nonsensical finish where Pretty Deadly ran into brawl with Briggs and Jensen. The referee saw this, but for some reason, as they brawled away, Gallus won the match by countout. That was very dumb. Very, very dumb. I thought Gallus would win the belts here and then wrestle Diamond Mine at Worlds Collide for the unification, but they may be setting up a fatal four-way with Pretty Deadly added to it. If that's the case, I think they would put the unified belts on Pretty Deadly. But again, I have no idea why this was a count-out and not a disqualification. Not that it matters in the end, but very stupid. We got a Chase University skit with the introduction of William Regal's son, Charlie Dempsey, to NXT television, the main show. I can already see the family resemblance. Chase brought Dempsey in for a training session with his students, and Dempsey stretched them like he was Stu Hart in the dungeon. Dempsey called them all soft. He told them to do some homework and Google Billy Robinson. I'm getting Pete Dunne vibes from this kid, which is not a bad thing. Unlike the match we got with Indy Hartwell and Blair Davenport, which was pretty bad. This was Davenport's NXT debut. She's another one over from NXT UK. With the blonde streaks in her hair, she reminded me of a cross between Paige and Seth Rollins from the early days of The Shield. I don't know if these two just weren't on the same page, no pun intended, or what, but I didn't think this was a good showcase for Davenport at all. And that high-angle brainbuster she used for the finish looked awful. Like, she was struggling to get Indy up and then looked like she killed her when she dropped her. So I thought this was a miss and a mess. This was a miss and a mess. But after the match, Davenport said that she was the number one contender for the NXT UK Women's Championship, and she wanted her shot, and you know, this is, of course, what's going to happen now. NXT UK is going to go away. So when you have a number one contender for the title, all this stuff kind of gets forgotten about now that they're looking to unify all these titles. Well, that didn't sit very well with Ms. Davenport. So she demanded to be added to the match between Mandy Rose and Mako Satomura, who is the reigning NXT UK Women's Champion, both of whom, by the way, came out to confront each other. It just looked wrong. Looking at Mako standing in that Nickelodeon zone they have down there, I don't know, just, it didn't look right. Davenport said that she deserved to be added, so now it's going to be a triple threat match at Worlds Collide. next Sunday. Toxic Attraction, from what I understand, was due for a main roster call-up before Gigi got hurt. I assume if that's the case, Mandy would come with them. Unless Mako is planning on moving to the U.S., I think, you know, putting the title on Davenport next Sunday is the most likely outcome. Sasha Banks, I'm sure, was very excited to see Mako out there. I would not be surprised if that was one of the promises Triple H made to get her to re-sign. If you come back, I'll give you a match with Mako. I can't tell you when or where, but I'll give you the match with Mako. A few segments later, they come back, and Indy Hartwell is still in the ring. This was awesome. This was actually my favorite part of NXT. She's sitting on the ring apron. She's facing out into the crowd, and she's looking all dejected. She talked about hitting rock bottom over the last few months and how she's lost everything. She really did. She lost her husband, who got fired. She lost her best friend and her tag team partner, who got fired. She lost Johnny and Candice, who left the company, and Theory, who got called up to Monday Night Raw. So she was all alone. And she started to blame herself. Maybe it's me. Right? She's blaming herself for all of her troubles when all of a sudden the crowd comes alive. We couldn't see it right away because it was happening on the opposite side of the ring. But then we see on the opposite side of the ring outside is Dexter Lumis. He slid out from what looked to be underneath the ring. And Indy hears the reaction from the crowd and her eyes get all wide and she slowly turns around and the two lock eyes. And they slithered on their hands and knees into the center of the ring until they met in the middle. They stood up and they hugged and everybody cheered. Indy planted a kiss on them and they cheered again. And the two of them left together with Dexter carrying his wife in his arms to the back. And the crowd popped huge for this and they started an index chant. Wade Barrett was disgusted by this turn of events. Just like Bobby Heenan would be. If Bobby Heenan were doing commentary for this show, he would be absolutely disgusted by this entire display. By the way, Wade Barrett has re-signed with WWE. His contract was coming due. He says he's very happy there, and he has re-signed with the company, and said he is not ruling out the possibility of getting back into the ring at some point. He is very happy and very content to do commentary, but his body's feeling good. He said never say never. But in the lobby of the PC, they get to the back, and Lumis hands Indy a handwritten note, and they lock lips one final time before Dexter walks through the front doors of the Performance Center, and very peacefully, we see the blue and red flashing lights outside, so we know the cops are there. And he peacefully surrenders to the cops, who I guess arrested him for the kidnapping that happened in Toronto on Monday. I guess they followed him all the way down to Orlando. Indy looked at the note. It had a heart drawn on it with the message, "Goodbye, Indy. I love you." This was fantastic. He came back for her. He came back for her. What a love story. You know, what's so great about this is that Lumis was fired, and there was never any finality to the storyline, you know, them being married, and it just ended. And then he gets rehired, and they're able to go back and tie up loose ends between the two of them. I love that they thought to do that. This was either tying up loose ends, which as a viewer, I appreciate that, or Indy Hartwell is getting the call up to Monday Night Raw soon. But I love this segment. This and the Sami Zayn stuff on SmackDown were my favorite segments of the entire week. I appreciate good storytelling on my wrestling shows. It does not have to be all about the matches. I like good storytelling. Legado del Fantasma without Santos Escobar. He's been banished from NXT after his loss to Tony D'Angelo. They lost to Joe Gacy's dyad. This was their send-off because later on in the parking lot, Escobar pulled up in an SUV. Rolled down the window, and he said, "You didn't think I was leaving you guys behind, did you? La familia sticks together." And Wilde and Mendoza and Lopez, Electra Lopez, they all climbed into the car, and they drove off out of the NXT parking lot for the final time. Next stop, Monday Night Raw or Friday Night SmackDown. I'm very happy they're keeping them all together.
Tiffany Stratton and Wendy Chu had a lights out match in the main event. They turned the lights down like it was a Sin Cara match. Not really a fan of that. But I gotta say, this was way better than I expected it to be. This was way better. I thought both women delivered big, and Stratton has advanced so much from her first few matches. She is a natural athlete, and she seems to have picked this up quicker than most because of that, you know, very, very similar, I think, to the way that Bianca Belair did. Bianca Belair was, you know, a world-class athlete and, you know, didn't have a lot of experience doing this, but picked it up very quickly, and now she's one of the top females in the entire business. You know, she is one of the most pushed performers on the entire, on either show, right? The reigning women's champion. She's already headlined a WrestleMania. She's had a lot of success in a very short period of time. Tiffany Stratton looks to be somebody who I think is following in those same footsteps. A lot of similarities there to Bianca Belair's rise. They did a thumbtack spot, but without thumbtacks. They used Legos instead. And it worked, because if you've ever stepped on a Lego before, you know how much that shit hurts. You don't even need to step on them. I bought the Sonic the Hedgehog Lego playset a few months ago. I said, fuck it. I haven't played with Legos since I was a kid. I used to have a Lego briefcase. It had my name on it, and I used to keep all my Legos in there. This is going back a long time. I have no idea what happened to it, but it'd been so long since I had even thought about Legos, right? Because, come on, I mean, adults don't play with Legos, right? That's what everybody thinks. And then I saw this, and I'm like, fuck, that's cool. I gotta buy that. So I bought it. And I tell you what, because I figured it would make for a nice decorative piece. It's like the Green Hill Zone level of the Sonic the Hedgehog video game. And I gotta tell you, I actually found it very relaxing. Every Monday for like a month, I would just sit in my kitchen. I'd have Raw on in the background, half paying attention to it. And I would put this thing together. And there were a few times where I would put a piece on and maybe I put it on the wrong way or something. And I would accidentally clip my finger. And let me tell you something. That shit hurts. This shit hurts. So anyway, she ended up losing to Wendy Chu. Stratton keeps working like this and getting better. She'll be on the main roster before long. So I like the main event. I love the Indian Dexter reunion, tying up that story. I love that Escobar is bringing the rest of Legado with him. But the rest of the show wasn't very good. They are promoting this Worlds Collide show pretty hard. They're promoting it at like a breakneck pace here. I don't understand why this had to be rushed the way that they're rushing it, just to get it done Labor Day weekend. Unless you look at it for what it is, which is a weekend where they can try to completely drown out the AEW show by putting on two of their own. That's the reason why this is being rushed. Because there really is no reason to have this next weekend, when they could have taken their time really establishing some of the UK faces, because, you know, you're sunsetting the brand. Brand's going away. You've already said you're not launching NXT Europe until sometime in 2023, probably the latter half of the year. I don't get the sense this thing is going to launch in January or February. I just don't understand what the rush is, unless you look at the timing of it, and then it becomes a little more clear. Let's do some quick mailbag questions. And then I got to get ready to get out of here soon. TheSolomonster@gmail.com is the email address. Please include your name and where you are from. Like our pal Chris from Phoenix. Not that I am complaining, because the matches are going to be great. But do you feel the bulk of the all-out card builds are undercooked? Jungle Boy versus Christian. Starks against Hobbs. Danielson against Jericho. Tag Champs against the Acclaimed. What are your thoughts? So he's referring specifically to the build for some of these matches. I think the build to Christian and Jungle Boy is fine. I mean, it's been going on now for a few months. And that story goes back even a year, right, when they first linked up. I don't have an issue with the build to that match. The Acclaimed and Swerve in Our Glory is ridiculous. I agree. I mean, that it's just kind of thrown together. No build at all. It doesn't feel like the right time to put the belts on the Acclaim. Maybe Full Gear, but yes, that feels very slapped together. Danielson and Jericho. The thing with Danielson and Jericho, the issue with them really started back in May. Danielson got hurt. So we don't know what kind of angles they had planned with them, you know, but he got hurt, he got concussed, and he missed the Forbidden Door show, and then he came back, and then he wrestled Daniel Garcia, but then he was off television again for 2 or 3 weeks. And I think that hurt the build a little bit, but you can't say that Danielson and Jericho is a brand new issue that just started. I mean, it goes back to at least May. Could they have done a better job of building it up? Yes. Starks and Hobbs, same thing. The turn only happened a few weeks ago, but the one that really sticks out to me, honestly, is the tag team title match build. It's just very, very, very slapped together. But like you said, you know, I look at the matches that we know of for the card. Right now, there's 10 matches that are official, assuming that the Eddie Kingston match has been, 86th. And I look at this card, and the potential is to have some, you know, kick-ass matches that could go down as Match of the Year candidates. I think once we get to the pay-per-view next weekend, all these matches are going to deliver. Jad from London, England. When John Cena appeared on Raw to celebrate his 20-year anniversary at the end of June, he said while he did not know when, he would be back. Well, Survivor Series is being held in Boston this year, so do you think we could potentially see John Cena make an appearance in his hometown, quote-unquote, because apparently West Newbury is not big enough to acknowledge, to start a storyline with someone, and if so, who? All comes down to his schedule. His schedule frees up, I'm sure Triple H would love to have him at the Survivor Series. If he's free, then yes. I could see him coming in for a match with Austin Theory. Michael in Liverpool, England. My question is regarding The Rock, possibly facing Roman Reigns at WrestleMania next year. Do you agree that a safer and smarter option for a match, provided both are booked for the show, would be Rock and Cena versus the three members of the Bloodline? Let's just say Rock is booked to face Roman one-on-one. He's going to need several warm-up matches beforehand, similar to the months prior to his second match with Cena in 2013, and I just don't see that happening at all, considering the crazy schedule that he has and the fact that he's 50. What do you think? If The Rock comes back to work Roman Reigns, it's one-on-one. That's it. John Cena does not have to get involved in this at all. We already had Roman Reigns against John Cena. John Cena lost. John Cena would be better used working with somebody else. John Cena has nothing to do with this. It does not have to be a tag team match or a handicap match. If Rock is going to come back and work Roman, it's got to be one-on-one at WrestleMania. Doesn't mean that he needs a warm-up match. He could have three warm-up matches. It's not going to matter. He's going to go in there at WrestleMania. He's going to be however old he's going to be at that point. It's been years since he's had any kind of a match. I don't see what him having, let's say, one or two matches in the months beforehand, I don't see how that's going to make that much of a difference. He's going to go in there and he's going to look the way that he looks. He got injured the last time we saw him against Cena in that second match. He tore multiple muscles in that match. And that was 10 years ago. WrestleMania next year, it will be 10 years since that second match with John Cena. So it's going to be a risk no matter what if he gets in the ring. Probably one of the reasons why we haven't seen The Rock back yet, because he's got all these commitments and he's making movies still, and he goes in there and he tears this or he tears that and it sets everything back. I'm sure he has a lot of reservations. I'm sure he hasn't made up his mind yet about exactly what he wants to do. But if you get a commitment from The Rock to come in and work Roman Reigns, you do The Rock one-on-one with Roman Reigns. You don't do Rock and Cena. You don't do a handicap thing. It's got to be one-on-one, Rock and Roman, that's it. Period, end of story. Ray from Arlington, Texas. What are some non-finisher signature moves that always make you smile? For me, there are a few. Randy Orton's power slam, Rick Steiner's mid-air power slam, and Owen Hart's overhead belly-to-belly. Steiner's power slam is a good one. The other one I think of is Road Warrior Animal. Road Warrior Animal had a great power slam. But me personally, I have to go with Sami Zayn's Blue Thunderbomb. I love the Blue Thunderbomb. I wish he would use it as a finish on occasion. Not all the time, but I think from time to time, him using the Blue Thunderbomb as a finish would be great. It's such a great move. And Z Ming, I was browsing around the e-shops that sell replica belts, and I stumbled upon a WWE Jerk of the Month belt that they were selling. I tried checking Google and all it gave me was Daniel Bryan holding the belt. Do you have any details on the Jerk of the Month title? I do, actually. The Jerk of the Month title was something that WWE Magazine came up with many years ago, and they had an actual belt created for it. I think it was green, but the plates looked really nice. The side ones had skulls on them. I'm a sucker for some skulls. So it looked really nice. It only had three plates. The center plate and then one on each side. This may have been before they changed the WWE title to a three-plate design. I don't remember if this came right before that or right after that. So it's possible this one inspired the new WWE title design. Honestly, it was a really nice-looking belt. It was designed by a guy named Joshua Smith, who goes by Hydro74 online. So I'm sure if you type some of this in, just or type in Jerk of the Month, you'll see a picture of what the belt looks like. And again, it looks really nice. I think Daniel Bryan was the Jerk of the Month once, The Miz. Titus O'Neil was the Jerk of the Month once. I mean, who would call Titus O'Neil a jerk? The shame in this. But he was. He was the Jerk of the Month once. I don't know how long it lasted. I don't know where the actual belt is now. I have no idea. My guess would be the actual belt they made is probably sitting in their warehouse somewhere. So keep sending in those questions. The Solomonster. TheSolomonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter @Solomonster and on Instagram @TheSolomonster. Tonight is the big night, House of Glory, live on Fight TV, 7 Eastern. Again, I will be at Terminal 5 for the show. It is a packed lineup, the biggest show in the entire history of House of Glory. Very much looking forward to this show tonight. I'm going to be live with you tomorrow night, immediately after Monday Night Raw, because this is the go-home Raw before Clash at the Castle. So it's a big night. And then live again on Wednesday after Dynamite, and again on Friday after SmackDown. I don't know if we're covering Rampage or not, but we'll definitely be live at least after SmackDown, if not Rampage as well. And then next weekend, so just so you guys are aware, next Saturday, since I guess the next podcast will be after the pay-per-view, next Saturday is Clash at the Castle. It's a 1 o'clock Eastern start, so I'll be live on YouTube as soon as the pay-per-view is over, so you're probably looking at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So you get a little Solomonster before you sit down to have dinner. Or maybe during dinner next Saturday. But I will be covering Clash of the Castle as soon as it's over. And then the usual podcast next Sunday. That'll be episode 772. And I guess that is also All Out. So that night, when All Out is over, 8 hours later, I'll be live probably after midnight. I'll be live for the All Out coverage as well. NXT Worlds Collide is next Sunday at 4 o'clock Eastern. I will not be watching Worlds Collide until the next day. And even then, I don't know that I'm going to be doing anything on the YouTube channel or just wait until the following week. I haven't even decided yet. You know, this is the shitty schedule that WWE decided upon next weekend. Very inconvenient for me. So I will cover Worlds Collide whenever I have a chance to actually watch it. The priority next weekend, Clash at the Castle, All Out. You're going to get 3 podcasts from me next weekend. 2 reviews and 772. So if you weren't sick of me already, get ready. Because you got a lot more of me coming up in the next week. I'm sure that makes most of you happy. Some of you maybe not so much. But anyway, I'm out of here. Be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a great final week here. The final days here in the month of August. And back next Sunday for episode 772. Of one of the longest running wrestling podcasts in the world. I will see you guys next Sunday. Take care.
The Solomonster sounds off.
We've got Ice Mocha, lot of weed. Ice Mocha, lot of weed. Oh, for some reason, I thought, I don't know, I was reading it just the way I was reading. I got to get through this. He says, new idea for Be the Booker and give their tag team a name. Pick 2 random wrestlers. Example. I don't know why I'm laughing. Oh, I fucking hate you for this.
The Solomonster sounds off each week, bursting with content. Podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow the Solomonster on Twitter @Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Solomonster. Solomonster sounds off.